are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
If you can, don't beat yourself up. You're right for this job if you are the sort of person that beats yourself up, but don't do it if you can, because life's too short.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Jens Niedzwiecki in Belgium at the NATO base. Jens is the head teacher of the British section of MOD Shape International School. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are what drives somebody to become a head teacher, the importance of gauging a transient student's ability quickly, and the isolation of being a British school in Belgium.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk, at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am in Belgium at Shape International School with head teacher Jens Niedzwiecki. I hope I've pronounced that correctly.
Very
difficult Polish name. Yeah, Jens, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Of course.
Tell us what you do and maybe just give everyone a little bit more help in how to pronounce your wonderful surname.
Yeah, I'm Jens Niedzwiecki, and I'm the head teacher of the British section of Shape International School. It's an MOD school, but it's an MOD international school that's located in the south of Belgium.
Oh, great. And so just for context, so you've been here three years?
Yeah, I've been here 3 years. I started as deputy. I got the job as deputy in January, and then in the November, the head teacher that I was working for moved on to a promoted role. So I had to act up at that particular point. And then when the... and then applied for the real thing when that came up, and I'm doing currently.
So we'll explore kind of reasons for headship in a moment. Before that, you were in Germany in Hague School.
Yeah, that's right. I was in Germany in Hague School. So this was part of the MOD Schools Network, MOD Schools Authority. So I was teaching a Year 6 teacher at Hague School in a place called Gütersloh. Before that, I was also in MOD schools in another school in the north of Germany, in a town called Fallingbostel, a school called Shackleton School. So I've stayed within this this authority, if you like, for the past few years.
And you're very much European, having an English university education, I suppose, a Swedish upbringing. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yes, I can. I have a bit of an international mixed bag background. I was born in Sweden. My mum on all of her side of the family is Swedish. My dad's British. His dad's Polish. His dad was Polish. I grew up in the UK. Perhaps it was inevitable that I would end up somewhere like here, as international as Shape.
Where was that?
Yeah, PGCE was at the University of Nottingham, although it was the PGCE primary skit course, so it was almost all on placement.
And we talked last night, you were in insurance.
Yeah.
At what point was the teacher conversation raised?
That's interesting. When I left university the first time round, I moved down to London from Birmingham. I took up a job in insurance. I didn't really have any designs on being a teacher at that particular point, although I'd sort of always contemplated it a little bit. I took a job as in pet insurance, and then after that we had a family move up north in Cheshire. My wife worked as an estate agent. I continued with some administrative jobs that weren't really what I wanted to do. And then at that point I thought, well, I really need to sort things out. I'd always thought about teaching, so at that point, it was that point that I acted on it and went into teaching. That's how that worked.
Having a dog and two cats, I'll probably pick your brains before I leave and get my insurance premiums down.
I'll be honest.
Back to kind of like, at what point was the conversation about coming to teach overseas and the reasons why?
Yeah, teach overseas. I'd been teaching for 4 years in Cheshire, I'd always, interestingly, I'd always known about this authority because my dad used to work for them. So I'd always known that
MOD schools.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And so I'd always known about MOD schools, or SCE as it was called then. And then I came to a point where I just fancied a new challenge and fancied an opportunity to live and teach abroad and experience the teaching world of MOD and children and families that are British serving military people based abroad, and see what that was all about. So so that's what, yeah.
What are the unique challenges of working in this context?
Well, high mobility is a challenge that every MOD school is presented with. That varies. Sometimes it's a kind of a whole battalion switch, so almost like a whole school of children will leave, and then one will come in, and then they sort of stay for a longish period of time compared to what we have. But what we have here is what they call a trickle posting system. So families and kids come and go all the time throughout the year, really, and many of the kids are here just for 2 or 3 years, some longer, but there's plenty. The majority is sort of around about that time. There are one or two that are here for even an even shorter period of time. We've got one or two kids here for 18 months, for example. So, so that's that in itself is a challenge, of course, and ensuring that we know where kids' starting points are and know how we can cater for them. But I mean,
and we also talked with staff last night about the living on the camp base, the challenges of always having to be a teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a huge factor, really. Here, it's a very, very high quality way of life living here, and it's exceptionally interesting, very international, lots and lots of interesting rich features of it.
If you could give me five kind of the best things about it to kind of entice listeners to come and work in MOD schools, what would be the top five benefits for an individual teacher stroke family?
That's interesting, because it depends on the environment, depends on the location, depends on the context, really. So the context here is different to, say, Cyprus and Germany, and so they might have different responses there. But ultimately, it's an opportunity to live and work abroad, teach abroad, but it's still within the British school system, so the British mainstream education system. So it isn't like international schools in the sense that the pay scale changes, or there's differences to the to the pension. We have the same system here for that, all the sort of job security, I suppose, that comes with that. I suppose that's a plus point. But really, it's an opportunity to see the big wide world and experience life abroad, whilst at the same time performing the wondrous craft that is teaching.
And what's your favourite part of working in MOD schools? So how many years have you been in the MOD system?
So I've been here, it'll be 7 years now, I believe, just about. My favourite part, that's a good question. Because again, it's based on where you are. My favourite thing about where we are currently is the exceptionally vibrant, interesting international element of living here. I play football on a Sunday in my spare time, and I play with guys who are Polish, Czech, American, British, of course, German, and that's fabulous. And you have the parties and celebrations of all these different nations going on through the year, which is great for families. And that's wonderful. So that's a real plus point of where we are now. It's quite unique in that. When I lived in Germany was just a wonderful country to live in. So much to explore. exceptionally sort of cutting edge, yet at the same time loads of history, of course, loads of interesting history, wonderful places to see, wonderful places to visit. So there's lots there. So each country, each place where you might be based has unique features that are worth exploring. Mm-hmm. So across the authority, we've got, there's a school in the Falklands, we've got a school in Gibraltar, Naples, mm-hmm. many in Cyprus, Brunei, Germany, the Netherlands.
Yeah, so I've done some research. Is there 9 or 13 schools
now? I'd have to check. I think you're probably right.
Now, just looking outside the window, could you describe to listeners, in terms of the physical infrastructure of the schools that are there, describe to them what that looks like? Because I don't think I've ever seen that in my travels before.
Yeah, this particular MOD school, so we're an MOD international school, but what we are is a British school within an international school campus. We share our building with a Canadian school, which is a fascinating experience and exceptionally enjoyable, with loads of potential for real, a really quality stuff there. But we are situated in a campus where there are other schools. So there's an American elementary school, an American middle school, an American high school, a Belgian school, a Norwegian, Polish, Turkish school. So there are periods where the kids are all kids of all those nations and more actually are outside. Outside playing. So that's interesting. There are opportunities for us to get together with certain sporting events. And
all the buildings are relatively new, aren't they? Rebuild.
Yeah, so this particular area has been under a project of redevelopment, regeneration, and yet we're almost, every school within the campus just about now is in a new building. So that's interesting. And
could you just list through the countries, the different schools and curriculums we have here?
So we've got the British school. We deliver the UK, the English national curriculum and all the things that go with that. There's a Canadian school, which is our partner school that we share a building with. US elementary school, US middle school, Belgian kindergarten, Belgian all through school, so middle a primary and a high school, a Norwegian school, a Turkish school, an Italian school, a Polish school, a Greek school. I think I've just about said them all now. So those are the schools that we have on the campus.
Great. Now I'm going to put your headship hat on.
All right.
That conversation about, or that thought moment, right, I'm going to apply for a headship.
Yeah.
Just describe that to listeners about you making the leap.
Well, for me, I'm not sure that it is necessarily similar for everybody, but I came into teaching quite late. I didn't necessarily set out my stall to end up in school leadership. I worked for a head teacher towards the latter part of my teaching career that I got a lot of inspiration from, and through that, I just sort of thought if I was to lead a school and this is sort of the way that I would like to do it, and it made me think that I could do it really. I had the wherewithals to be able to do it, maybe not immediately, but in a while. So then I applied for the deputy position here at SHAPE, and then really for me, as I say, it's not like everybody's situation, because I was just there as the deputy when the head teacher I was working for applied for a different position and got that. So I was there as the acting head teacher. And at that point, I wanted to sort of put in place or start to lead the school in the way that I was inspired by. And then the real thing came up and I applied, and it just seemed fitting to apply at that particular point. Thankfully I got it. Third year. Yeah, this
including is my, the acting.
Including part. The acting, but this is my third year. Okay.
So what are the what's the current focus, the school priorities?
So we are at the moment striving to refine our curriculum. We have been engaged on a sort of a pursuit recently over the last sort of year and a bit to ensure that what our children receive is as broad a curriculum as we can offer, so that the children get high quality PE, high quality history, high quality RE across the way. Mm-hmm. We have at our heart a kind of a mission statement, which is international, inspiring, incredible. We want to be able to inspire all learners. We want to be able to find, well, explore really what inspiring means, but we want to be able to inspire our children. Our children are here for not very long, mm-hmm. so it's a common felt thought that we that, you know, we want to give them the most memorable, fulfilling, nurturing experiences as we can. And that really feeds into our sort of curriculum drive, because we want the children that do have interests and inclinations and talents in PE, in geography, in DT, in art, we want to be able to cater and for them, inspire them. Okay. So we're engaged at the moment in sort of ensuring that our curriculum meets the needs of as many learners as we can. Okay. So we're doing that, but we're also trying to develop our opportunities and our provision for oracy. Okay. The idea of learning through talk and learning to talk, we're very much sort of influenced by what's coming out of Voice 21, doing some work with Three Bridges School in Southall in West London, and also linking with some other schools across MOD schools, namely Attenborough School particularly, who are engaged in a similar kind of pursuit. But I mean, ultimately there's a whole plethora of reasons why this is important for us, both contextually in terms of the curriculum, in terms of the children that the challenges that are presented to us with the children that are coming in.
I'm looking at we talked about your kind of map board. I can see your strategy in here. So listeners, if you imagine a grid, a large whiteboard with priorities on the left, or at least topics. So you've got professional development, teaching, learning, leadership, and school priorities. And the term ahead, what are the challenges? So I know you've identified curriculum and oracy, but what makes those a particular more difficult challenge for you as a head teacher working, one, within an MOD setting, two, within the SHAPE International School, and three, probably in Belgium or in Mons, so to speak, with the people that you have around you and the challenges of recruitment and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, ongoing significant challenges is our sort of isolated location in terms of British schools, British primary schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's not necessarily, there isn't an obvious cluster for us to sort of collaborate with. That in itself is particularly challenging. There have been years where people here have been pretty isolated. So what we're striving to do is make links with schools in the UK. We've been doing that with schools in Wiltshire, Three Bridges, as I mentioned, but also getting CPD together, inviting yourself to come over.
Difficult would it be for someone listening in the UK to visit here, you know, getting through the MOD kind of paperwork? Is it something fairly straightforward
to visit? It requires some administration, let's just put it like that. Visiting this part of the world is very, very straightforward currently, because we are at the other end of the Eurostar, which is great, where there are some very, very easy and quick flight connections from the UK to here. So that's straightforward. But actually, but we're situated on a NATO military base. So of course, there's levels of security that go with that, and that's mm-hmm. where our parents of our kids work. So there are naturally elements of mm-hmm. security to go through for that. But we have visitors. We've had visiting authors this year. This is another thing that we're trying to that we've done in a bid to sort of alleviate this problem of being isolated. We've had Maz Evans, we've got Lisa Thompson coming. Okay. We've had Sophie Henn come over. That's just this year. So we've worked all that through. So, you know, we're trying to break down those barriers of the isolated localities, okay, stopping us from moving forward with innovative British practice.
We walked around the school a few times, and I get the sense, you know, a beautiful brand new building with its snagging list, but on the whole, teachers, pupils, yourself even, very happy, well resourced.
We are well resourced, so we're very, very fortunate with that. It was interesting to see that you were drawn to the resource cupboard, yes, as we walked past, and
I had to stick my head in and see all those nice poster rolls.
Borders. We are well resourced, both in terms of those sorts of physical items. There are areas that we need development in. Even, you know, in terms of resources, there are certain aspects of our environment that we would like to improve. Mm-hmm. A learning environment that we would like to improve. We're well resourced in terms of human resources. With our staffing, we have an LSA in every class, as well as the teacher. One or two. A couple of classes in early years have more than that as well. So that we're very fortunate with that.
Now we've just hit the 20-minute barrier, so I'm going to throw loads of quick fire questions. Okay, no pause, hesitation, those types of things.
Okay.
So let's see how you do. So give me an immediate project that you're working on personally in the school. What's on your to-do list?
RSC. Yes, I mean developing our RSC school development area.
Okay, book you're currently reading.
I'm currently reading Flow by Cheikh Mahelyi. And I've got, when I've finished that one, I've of course got your book here, Just Great Teaching, signed copy.
I can see Mary Myatt, the curriculum here.
Yeah, no, I read that one. I read that one a couple of times, and that's had a huge impact, and that's something that we're sort of using a little bit as a reference point across the school with our curriculum.
Shout out for Mary Meyer. What's the book you've got going at home?
Flow by Cheikh Mahelyi, and I hope that I'm pronouncing that.
I believe it's Cheikh Zen Mahai.
There we go.
And I'm following your phonetical for your own surname.
Cheikh Zen Mahai. Okay, and then a Ken Robinson book after that on finding your element.
Jens, what advice would you give to someone who wanted to be a head teacher?
Gosh, be sure, because it's very fulfilling, but it can also be a lonely place. Do collaborate. Do allow staff to collaborate. Do wander about. Do go and see what's going on, and do get stuck in with the learning. Do have an open door, but do protect time for yourself for admin, emails, and so on. Do encourage staff to try things out and celebrate and build on that. Recruit carefully. One fantastic thing that's happened to me is the recruitment of our deputy head teacher, Ian Ratcliffe. He's been fantastic, and that's helped me out as a head teacher immensely. Do build networks with other head teachers. As I say, it can be a lonely place. I work in the same building as Peter LeBlanc, the Canadian, the head teacher, principal of the Canadian section of SHAPE International School. Mm-hmm. That's been brilliant. Do plan difficult conversations. If you can, don't beat yourself up. You're right for this job if you are the sort of person that beats yourself up, but don't do it if you can, because life's too short.
Can I push you for one thing you need in terms of your own development? You'd give advice to yourself. What would it be?
Give advice, definitely. Communication. That's something that I know I'm certainly working on at the moment in developing and improving as best I can.
Okay. If you did it all again, insurance or teaching, which would it be?
Absolutely teaching. It's a wonderful profession. And, you know, I think that there's no question. Definitely that. And, for anybody who is doing it, you are doing a great thing.
Position on the football field?
Centre half.
Scored any goals this season?
I've actually scored one or two. Yes, I've actually scored one or two, popping up from the corner, not necessarily with my head, but by making a nuisance of myself in the box.
Okay, next vacation plans?
The Netherlands. Went skiing over Christmas. That was lovely. Another benefit of living over here. That was fantastic. But going to relax in a holiday park in the Netherlands at half term.
Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
That's a great question. Personally, it would be very good if you interviewed Ben Turner, Andy Chapman, friends of mine doing great things in their school. Somebody on Twitter that I follow and I'm very interested in the thoughts of and inspired by some of the work of is Amy Fast. She's in the US.
Oh yes, Fast Crayon.
Fast Crayon. So I think that I'd be really interested to hear that.
Okay. Where can listeners find out more about your school? You on Twitter? Any websites, blogs?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Mr. N T and L. That's AND instead of the and sign.
Yes. You've got a blog. You have got a blog, haven't you?
I do have a blog. I've just started out in that world, and I'd be very, very interested to receive feedback from people on that.
Okay, we'll stick that in the podcast. And what's the school website address for listeners?
BritishSectionShape.com.
Okay, final question.
Okay.
What do you want your legacy to be in teaching?
Oh, gosh. International, inspiring, incredible. That it would be that.
Okay, yeah, your three eyes, of course. Yeah.
The important three eyes. Yeah.
Okay, so Jens, let me have one more chance. Nijedz Wiecki.
Very, very good.
Oh, I'm getting better.
Ross, well done.
Right, thank you for having me in your beautiful primary school here in Mons in Belgium. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
So listeners, find out more on Teacher Toolkit. You're listening to the most influential blog on education in the UK, and I'm Ross and this is Jens. Thanks, Jens.
Thank you, Ross. It's been a pleasure. Brilliant.
Okay. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.